Welcome to Inclusion Matters, produced by the Center for Inclusive Childcare,
aka the CICC.
We're located at inclusivechildcare.org.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast of the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Cindy Croft, director of the center, and I'm here with my colleague Priscilla Weigel.
Hello. Good to be back.
Yeah, who's also now a staff person with the center, so this is very exciting for us. So we've been talking in our previous podcast about the six factors that really promote inclusive practices, according to recent research by the Early Childhood Research Institute on Inclusion. Mm-hmm. So kind of exciting to have these factors given to us in a way that we can use as a framework for helping early childhood programs really look at what they're doing and how they can be even more successful in their practices.
Right. And there's six of them. There's not 75.
Right.
You know, so it's a short list where you think, you know, I think sometimes folks think that inclusion, well, that means we're going to have to knock down walls and do all these other things. And sometimes you might need to do some physical changes like that, but really, a lot of the time it's just changing perhaps how you transition or your expectations for certain activities and how you'd frame directions and things like that that are all doable just by looking at the teacher or the person that's in charge of that group of kids and saying, how can I change what I'm doing to help children be successful?
Right. And, you know, I was thinking you could even put, kind of paraphrase these six and have them somewhere in, you know, the staff room or something.
Sure.
That kind of reminded people. And just to go over the other three that we talked about, the strongest factor for successful implementation, the research group found, was providers or staff who were really passionate about inclusion. Mm-hmm. And then a vision that the whole program had around an inclusive program. Mm-hmm. So we talked about that. And then state and national policies that really prompt and promote inclusion. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about that a little bit. So that would be kind of interesting to have those somewhere.
Yes.
Just to be starting points for discussion and ongoing dialogue about how are we doing with these and how's our state doing. But we're going to go on to number four in this research right now and talk about what they felt was next, and that really is about training for staff to be more qualified to care for kids with special needs and disabilities, and additional money, and then other types of support. And right away, when you say additional money, you think, oh, well,
we can't do it because we don't have any money.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. And I think that the additional money comes in to just provide the staff that you're working with, or maybe you're the director, and you think, okay, I have a passion for this. I want to set the tone for my center. I want to open this up to staff to really feel good about it and develop that passion as well. Where do I go? Well, there's training available, but you do have to oftentimes pay for that training. Mm-hmm. But what we know about being trained, it eliminates or lessens the fear or anxiety. Right. The more information you have, the more confident you feel. It's that way with anything. If you're frightened of something, you're not going to just magically not be frightened. You have to educate yourself. You have to train yourself to be okay with it. And I think that the training that's available out there through either our organization, many different places, there's a lot of initiatives in our state on just building quality, you know, care for children, that responsive caregiving idea. So many things that help you as a provider include a child with any kind of special need or a child that may be at risk for other things too. So I think that the money piece is maybe something that you need to do up front to build that quality and that education on just different topics for your staff to feel good and confident.
And we talked earlier about how if you're building an inclusive quality setting, you're building a quality setting. And so there may be some money that needs to be spent in, you know, the kind of equipment that you're purchasing, or, you know, high quality activities, toys that you're purchasing mm-hmm. for children that will be used by everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you bring in for a child who may have a particular behavior need, you decide to build an activity center that's really sensory-based. You want that for all your children.
Right, right, right.
You know, so what we do for kids, maybe because we're trying to meet a need, visual supports. We know visual supports are great for every child.
Right, right.
So we need to have an eye across the board and not just think, wow, this one child is really going to cost me too much money. Mm-hmm. And again, I know I don't really need to say this, but we can't assume a disability is always the same for every child.
Right.
And will necessarily cost something, because in the past something may have cost a certain amount of money. For instance, I think of one-on-ones or paras often. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe a child with a disability does require a one-on-one, but another child with the same disability doesn't need a one-on-one at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right. So individual.
It is. And often, too, I think the equipment piece, if we're going to purchase equipment that's going to maybe meet some specific needs, staff do need to be trained on, okay, we bought this squishy cushion, what do we do with it? When does a child need it? Is now a good time? It's because once you have that equipment, then that might add to anxiety too, because then you think, oh no, we bought all this equipment, now what are we going to do with it? So that training needs to go hand in hand with, just if you're going to buy something new to add to your program that you know will be helpful to a child with a special need, have some background in how to use that equipment, and that will also lessen that anxiety and that fear of the unknown for your staff.
Exactly, and I think we go back to the second point of this research study, which was that vision mm-hmm. for inclusion. And I think if a program is all on board about what they want to do around including all kids, belonging, acceptance, then this piece about cost will be factored into that original discussion.
Right.
We're on board, and so we're going to commit a certain amount of our budget towards making sure all children right. who come in here feel accepted, and we make adjustments through universal design mm-hmm. so that all children can participate to the mm-hmm. fullest extent of their potential and ability.
Right. And so, when you have a quality program, people will come to your program, because that's what is the key to success for children
exactly.
and their development.
Great. Wonderful. Well, and then we'll go on to point number 5, which was at the program level then also, there's support that's given, and this is really probably kind of by the leadership of the program, for communication and collaboration among the people who are part of the inclusive program. So that would involve both the teachers and the teacher aides to be working with the people who are involved, maybe with the child with the disabilities, IEP,
right.
or so maybe the therapists and the specialists, or mm-hmm. the family, maybe the family members bringing people in. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is a para that comes in to work with the child, or a personal care attendant. Whoever it is that comes with the child's needs,
mm-hmm.
there's support all the way up for collaboration to happen mm-hmm. so it can be smooth, the transitions
right.
can be smooth, and communication. And I'm sure in your experience you've seen great models of that and maybe not so great models mm-hmm. of that.
Well, and I think the key when you look at not working, it becomes a us against them mm-hmm. kind of mentality. Oh, they have, you know, better ratios, or they have this child in a totally different setting than we do, so how can we be expected to do the same things? If there is a collaboration and there's open communication between those two groups versus that kind of just, we're going to do our thing, you're going to do your thing, because they're so different, they're really not. And both can be enhanced by sharing information. And I recently, just in this past summer, there was a program that was within a building where the child would go to the special education services, but the teachers had never observed that child in those settings, and the special ed folks would come to the child care, but it wasn't a two-way street. And just suggesting that teacher go and see what they do with this child when they spend time with her gave her tons of ideas on ways to work with the child in her setting as well. Simple things that she didn't even realize would be useful until she saw them in put into practice. So that collaboration, it can be transforming for a child and the family when a parent knows that you are taking that extra step to make those connections happen. I mean, you have to have that parent permission to share that information and to have that open communication, but so many parents are so willing because they want their child to be successful.
Exactly. And that collaboration is so important in so many ways, as you have said. Because if a child has specific goals that we as a team somewhere wants them to accomplish, why wouldn't we be bringing everyone to the table to say, how could you help the child accomplish this in your way? Mm-hmm. We're going to do our specific therapy in our setting or in our particular therapeutic manner. Mm-hmm. How can it be generalized to what you're doing? I mean, it's just to such advantage to the child.
Oh, yeah. And I think that often, too, in early childhood, social-emotional growth is so critical. And some of the goals that maybe a special ed IEP might have may seem not to go in line with those social-emotional goals because they might be fine motor or gross motor or something more specific to a specialized domain. But when you look at those goals, helping that child be more successful on the playground, that'll go hand in hand with that social-emotional development and growth.
Exactly.
If they're able to climb on the climber because they've been working on those gross motor skills, they're going to have more fun going over to that climber independently and connecting with the children way up at the top versus staying down at the bottom and going, I can't get there. What do I do? So there's so many ways that you look at it and you think, how could we not connect on this?
Right. Let's talk about it. It's not a secret sauce.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And then, of course, that support piece has to be there from, whoever really is directing the staff or the program. Maybe in a family childcare home, it's a little bit different because they're making their own decisions. And then there's other things that may come into play. For instance, just a feeling of making sure we respect each other's boundaries and programs and so forth. So those are very important. Well, the last point that this research council has made is one that I really love, and that is it's sort of like encompassing all of these other wonderful factors is there needs to be a passionate community of individuals that works to spark interest in implementing inclusive programs. So they're talking about our parents sort of as a groundswell or other advocates out there really, really pushing for more inclusive programs. And we know that every ECE program should be inclusive under the law, but what we're talking about are programs that truly meet the spirit of inclusivity by having this, any child can come here and we're going to do our darndest to make sure that we retain and meet their every need.
Right.
So having that whole sort of spirit and movement behind them, I love that.
Oh, I think it would be well, the directors of special education in the school district saying to folks that are working within their staff, this is our motto. If we have children that are in our IEP formats and we are not connecting with their child care out there, we are not doing our job. It's setting the tone and saying, and center directors saying, wow, we've got a lot of children here that are diagnosed with a special need or kids that we have some red flags, some concerns about. How are we connecting with the school district? How are we helping parents get that support? And then, as you said, parents. Parents are amazing. When you think of what they are willing to do because it's their child they're talking about and we are caring for that sweet baby. How are we going to help them feel good about dropping that child off every day? We're going to be open to their suggestions. They are the experts on their child. They can share tons of information about that specific disability, their child's needs, what soothes them, what comforts them. And I think that if we're doing all those things, the other parts just come.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fabulous. I think that if people are able, if they want to learn more about these 6 points, they can go to the Early Childhood Research Institute on Inclusion And that was a national research project funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Mm-hmm. And they can contact us, and we can send them a little blurb out as well. But I think it's really helpful and encouraging, mm-hmm. because I know many people are listening going, okay, I have that passion.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
and I'm gonna put that into a philosophy statement, or I'm gonna maybe, we've got a lot of passion in our community, I'm gonna tap into that somehow, mm-hmm. or I think we've got some really great pieces here if people can kind of get a cohesive feel for what's going on in their own programs and in their own communities,
right.
to support inclusion.
Right. And it'll change the world for kids.
Yay. That's
Yay.
Perfect.
That's our job.
All right. Thank you, Priscilla.
Okay.
That's all for now. See you next time.